This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. The first elephants to arrive in America were imported from India and Africa in the late 1700s and early 1800s. Those elephants were paraded up and down the East Coast. Their owners charged people to see the elephant, which was such a sought-after experience, even President George Washington considered it worth the price of admission. The story of these elephants and the young slave who cared for them is the focus of the new novel in verse by the current poet laureate of Portsmouth, Tammy Truex. Recently, I stopped by her home in Elliott, Maine, to chat about the book, which is called For to See the Elephant. Tammy Truex, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thanks for coming to talk to me.
Things did not end well for either of those elephants, Gaja and Big Betty. Is it Big Betty or Big Bet?
I call her Bet, but I think she was referred to as both.
B-E-T-T-E is how it's spelled. And you turn a pretty critical eye towards the people who were basically exploiting this animal or selling this animal over and over again. Could you talk a little bit about the element of cruel capitalism here?
I didn't set out to tell a judgmental story that condemned that behavior, but that's the story. Yeah, just it's fact-based. They did bring her with the idea of making a profit by her, and the advertisements about a quarter to see the elephant, half of that for a child, all comes from newspaper accounts.
It seems like what you're writing about here, the arrival of these elephants and the realization on some people's parts that seeing an elephant and selling access to an elephant is a huge moneymaker. And in a way, as you set up here, it seems like this is the precursor to the modern day circus, the Barnum and Bailey kind of stuff. Is that what you were going for?
Yes, because I believe that is true. Some of the early guys who were doing these kinds of business, I do think they had a benevolent notion to what they were doing, that they were educating the masses who would otherwise never see or know creatures from distant places. Maybe that's just a big, fat, juicy rationalization for doing what they were doing.
The relationship that William, the slave boy, forms with both of these elephants is really heartfelt and strong. He feels it strongly, and the way you write the elephants, they seem to feel it strongly too. Is there a basis in the historical record for William?
There is. I didn't know it till the very end, literally when the manuscript had already gone to the publisher. I had decided to write The Keeper as an enslaved man without having anything to go on at all. Nothing. Zero in the record. But I have done a great deal of research on Black history in New England for a novel I've spent 12 years of my life writing, and learned a great deal about New England history and Black history, and know that most of the time, enslaved people were simply erased from the record. They were there, they were here, they were doing all of this work, but that's not going to be noted. Everything about who owned these elephants and who profited by these elephants refers to the white wealthy men who were doing that. But I couldn't write the story with a white guy doing that. I just couldn't accept that as credible or responsible way to tell the story. So I made up a character who was not named William. Everything about him was the same except the name. And after it went to press, I found a book published in 2016 by a historian who's affiliated with Historic Deerfield in Mass. His name is Peter Bennis, B-E-N-E-S, and he was writing about itinerant traveling entertainments of all kinds. But he found one little tiny record, like an ad, but an announcement paid for and taken out by the white wealthy owner of the elephant in a Providence paper in 1797. And it said something to the effect of, "I will not be responsible for debts incurred by William, the black man who cares for the elephant."
Why did you feel like you needed to have some kind of historical record that it exists? I mean, you're writing a work of fiction. You could easily invent a fact like that, and I would have taken it at face value as a reader.
Thanks. That's good to know. I do feel held to a very high level of responsibility in writing historical fiction, to get it as right as I can. One of the reasons I think I've been attracted to write historical fiction is because I've been really disappointed to find that so much of what I read is wrong. Inaccurate history, that we've been taught a lot of inaccurate, and I don't want to perpetuate that. It's really important to me not to.
I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about your status as Portsmouth Poet Laureate. You were recently named the newest poet laureate of the city of Portsmouth, and that comes with the duty, the obligation to carry out some kind of project. So I wanted to ask you what your project was.
I'm still hammering it out, but I think that I have the framework of what I want to do and have been thinking about it for a long time, frankly. I'm calling it Bridges, Poetry as a Bridge. So that's a play off of Portsmouth being a bridge town, but also the many ways that we can use poetry to bridge gaps. I want to play with that in a number of different ways. First aspect of my project that we're doing as a bridge is something that's just always been a part of my work for pay, my day jobs, which is a family literacy program. And we're going to gift every baby born at Portsmouth Hospital with a beautiful book of poetry that Tommy De Paola, another New Hampshire artist, has illustrated. One of my primary hopes for a bridge is to build a more active relationship with Portsmouth's sister city, which is Nichinan, Japan. And I would love to do that through poetry. Poetry in Japan is a really big deal. Their poets are rock stars. And of course, they've given so much to the world of poetry with their forms. I'd like to explore that in a lot of different ways.
Well, Tammy, thank you very much for speaking with me. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate you coming.
That's Tammy Truex. She's the current poet laureate of Portsmouth and the author of the new novel in verse, Four to See the Elephant. And you can find a list of the top 5 books on her bookshelf at nhpr.org. We are always looking for reading recommendations from listeners like you, so send them to me by email so I can shout them from the radio rooftops. The address is books@nhpr.org. You can also tweet at nhprbookshelf. And don't forget to check out the recommendations of our last guest, Lisa Bunker, who spoke about her latest book, Zenobia July, in an extended form on our podcast. To find that podcast, search for The Bookshelf from NHPR in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.